Parshas Achremois Kedoshim. Right in the beginning of Parshas Achremois, Vaidaber Hashem El Moshe Acharei Mois Shnei Bnei Aharon B'Korvosom Lifnei Hashem Vayomusu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Torah points out that when specifically did he talk to him? After the death of two sons of Aaron HaKohen, and he tells him, V'al Yovoi B'chol Eis El HaKodesh, tell your brother Aaron HaKohen that he may not enter the Kodesh Kodshim at will, Ki Be'onon Eiroe Al HaKapoires, and he gives him exact instruction of when he can and when he cannot enter the Kodesh Kodshim, and of course that launches the whole subject of Yom HaKippurim, the one day that the Kohen Gadol is in fact allowed and instructed to enter the Kodesh Kodshim. So Rashi, the very famous Rashi, picks up on the fact that why is it necessary to point out that this instruction followed Acharei Mois Shnei Bnei Aaron. That's true, historically that's when it may have happened. But why is that relevant to the instruction that we're talking about? So Rashi tells us the famous moshel. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said a moshel to a chole. The sick person comes to the doctor, and the doctor tells him, Al toichal tzoinin. Do not eat anything cold. It's unhealthy for you. Va'al tishkav betachev. Do not lie in this very chilly place. That's also unhealthy. That was the first patient. Bo acher, all of a sudden the second patient enters, and he says exactly the same. Do not eat this cold food, do not lie in this cold place, but then he adds, Sheloi Thomas Kederech Shemes Ployni, because otherwise you may end up dying just like Ployni, who you know very well. Look what happened to him, he died. Says Rashi, Ze Zirzoi Yoisei Min Harishon. This, of course, encouraged the second Choyle to be much more serious about his whole approach to these instructions, because he knows what we're talking about over here, as opposed to the Rishon, where it was just a list of instructions. Do this, don't do something else. Fine, I will, I won't. Says Rashi, Lekach ne'emar acharei mois shnei bnei Aaron. When Aaron HaKohen is told this instruction, do not enter the Kodesh Kodshim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe it's very important, it's paramount to add acharei mois shnei bnei Aaron, rather than just giving him the instruction, do not enter the Kodesh Kodshim, period. Rather, he tells him, don't forget, your own two sons died having entered the Kodesh Kodshim. That's exactly what they themselves did do. Don't you do the same. The question that must be asked is, what do we learn from this? How exactly HaKadosh Baruch Hu went about relaying this instruction to Aaron HaKohen in a way that he would best adhere to it, maybe very interesting historically. But why is that relevant to us? What is the Torah teaching us? We know every detail of every story recorded in the story, recorded in the Torah, which I think is very important, very, very practical, and as we'll soon see, I think very relevant to the period of time that we're now living through. I think everybody knows the famous Gemara. The Gemara says the following, and if misunderstood, if misconstrued, it may sound very cynical. The Gemara in Megillah in Daf Yudala tells us, Gedoilo Hasoras Taba'as. The removal of the ring by Achashveirosh was Godoil, was greater than 48 Nevi'im and 7 Nevi'os. Why? Because when Haman managed to convince Achashveirosh to remove that ring, do you know what happened? Oh, Klal Yisrael were moved into action. They were Chayza B'tshuva, there was Tfilah, there was Tanis. And what about the Nevi'im? And all the Nevi'is? Loi Hechziram Lamutov. They were unsuccessful in returning Klal Yisrael B'tshuva. This sounds like a very strange Gemara. What's the Gemara trying to do? Be cynical over here? That Haman was greater than all of the Nevi'im? Greater than all of the Nevi'is? Chas v'shalom loimakein. What are Chazal teaching us over here? Haman, in an instant, by getting Achashverosh to agree to remove that ring, in other words, signing that decree, he brought about the greatest movement in tshuva, more than all the Nevi'im. What Chazal trying to teach us? Chazal are teaching us a very important yesod. For a person to be inspired, for a person to be moved, it has to be real. It can't be airy-fairy in the air. So the Nevi'im come to Klal Yisrael and they tell them, you know, if you're not Chayza B'tshuva, this is going to happen, and that's going to happen. Really? When? What? Which? Where? The Beis HaMikdash seems fine. Everything is just fine and dandy. The Avodah is happening just the way we want it to. It wasn't real. It wasn't tangible. 48 Nevi'im, 7 Nevi'is, time and time and time again, they try and convince Klal Yisrael, but if you're not Chayza B'tshuva, this is what's going to happen, there's what's going to happen. And what happened to Klal Yisrael? Nothing. No response. Haman, in one split second, by removing that ring from Achashverosh, he brought about a movement in tshuva. Do you know why? Because that was very real. They saw the Gezerah. This was not something pending that might happen in another 30 years. It might happen in 50 years. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to destroy his own Beis HaMikdash. Unlikely. When is it going to happen? Nothing to do with me. But when that ring is removed from Achashverosh's hand, and Klal Yisrael receive a letter in the mail, it's very real now. This is not something that's going to happen perhaps one day. This is very real. The Gezerah is there in front of your eyes. You can read the paper. It says there that Klal Yisrael are going to be wiped out by Haman. That's very real. And when it's real, then Klal Yisrael are inspired. Then Klal Yisrael are moved. That's what the Chazal are teaching us. A classic example of this would be Seder night. We're less than a month from Seder night. We all remember, we said that there's a whole discussion. When indeed is the best time for Sipias Yis Mitzrayim? Oh, Yochel Me Rosh Chodesh? Maybe Rosh Chodesh? No. It's got to be today. Maybe early on in the day? No. It's got to be at night. When specifically at night? B'sho'o she'yesh matzah u'moroir munochim lefonecha. Oh, now it's very real. I see the matzah in front of me. I see the moroir in front of me. If Chazal tell us that we're expected on the Leil HaSeder to feel as if we left Mitzrayim, and the Rambam famously adds that one word, you have to feel as if you left Mitzrayim now, then it's got to be real. Not Rosh Chodesh, this is what's coming up, and not even on Erev Seder night, and not even on the night of Seder, until you ensure that you have in front of your eyes, B'shar she'yesh matzah u'moroir munochim lefonecho. That's the time that you can talk about Mitzrayim. When you can smell the waft of the moroir, when you can feel the matzahs in your hand, it's very real. It's not in the air, it's not theoretical, it's very tangible, and it's very practical. That is what Rashi is teaching us in the beginning of this week's parasha. Just like the doctor who wants to ensure, he wants to convince his patient, don't eat that which is unhealthy. Don't reside in a way which is unhealthy. If he merely gives him a list of instructions, this, that, the other, yeah, maybe not, who says, Says the second doctor, don't do the following because you'll end up dying like somebody else you know died. Oh, that becomes very real. Then it's very, very tangible. Then it's talking to me. I understand exactly what you mean. It's not just theoretical. I know and I see and I feel the practical ramifications of somebody who doesn't adhere to these instructions. Because I know this person who died. Oh, says Rashi, Zorzoi Yoisem in Harishon. The doctor will be much more successful with him. Why? Because it's very, very real. There is a famous question. A very famous question which is discussed by all of the Mefarshim and all of the Rishonim. Why on earth is there no mention in the Torah of Olam Haba? Not one mention. In a few places it's alluded to, there's a remez, there's not one single solitary posuk in the Torah that says, Rabbeisai, if you carry out the Tariag mitzvahs, then this world is the prize doir, you will end up in Olam Haba, Lanetzach, Netzachim. Not a single posuk. Famous question. If you look in the Kli Yokor in Parashas Bechukosai, he brings all of the different tirutzim, many, many, many different tirutzim, to this puzzling question. He brings in the name of the Eben Ezra, and he says, and I'll read you to the words, the Divrei HaOlam Haba, because if you start talking about Olam Haba, Lo Yovinu Echod Mini Elef. They won't understand what you're talking about. Why won't they understand what you're talking about? Says the Kli Yokor, V'daitoi. I'll explain to you what he means. Lefisha kosher letzayir. We have no frame of reference. We have no journalist who ever took a day to visit Olam Haba to describe it to us. How on earth are you going to conjure up this image for us? Kosher letzayir oisoi. It's a mokoim, which is Ruchni. We live in a world which is Gashmi. We have no frame of reference, no way of describing it, no way of making it real. And if we have no way of making it real, the Torah is alive. The Torah is vibrant. The Torah is real. The Torah doesn't therefore describe for us Olam Haba because we have no way of perceiving it. And that's very similar to what Rashi is teaching us in our parasha as well. The Torah has to be real. Don't eat these cold foods. It's dangerous. Really, what does that mean? Who says? Why? What? Which? Where? Like your friend died. Oh, that's very real. That's very tangible. There are many people in the world, I think they're called the green activists, who spend their life, good for them, investing energy in trying to convince the world about the greenhouse effect, about the ozone layer. They're on a very difficult mission. They're on a difficult mission. Convince somebody who drives here, there, and everywhere that, you know, there's carbon emissions, and if you're not careful, then in the year 2140, there's going to be a big hole in the ozone layer. All right, call when it happens. How's that relevant to me? Not nagea to me. It's not tangible. If somebody would convince you, listen, if you drive your car and there's carbon emissions and the world is going to change this afternoon, oh, that's very different. But nobody claims that. There's a change in global warming and they predict by the year 2050, then it could well be that in China, the temperature is going to go up by 2.5 degrees in the summer. Fine, speak to the Chinese. Nothing to do with me. And when's it going to happen anyway? In 40 years' time, to say that, so give me a call a year before. It's not real. It's not tangible. It's a very, very difficult mission to carry out. The Yesod that we're learning, and that Rashi is teaching us, and that ultimately the Torah is teaching us, is that the Torah HaKadosha, our Ruchnius lives, has to be real. It has to be tangible. Has to be tangible. It's well known. Somebody once heard the great Mashkiach, the Mira Mashkiach, the Ponovich Mashkiach, Reb Chatzka Levenstein, Zichrone Levrocha. He once heard him learning Chumash Rashi. and he heard a big commotion in his room, and he looks through the keyhole, and do you know what he saw? It was Parashas Beshalach. Reb Chatzke Levenstein was dragging from one side of the room a whole bunch of chairs, and he made a big pile. And then he dragged another pile of chairs, and he had these two piles, and then he walked through. Because for Reb Chatzke Levenstein, Kriyas Yam Suf wasn't there just to be a theoretical historic story. He wanted to make it feel real. What did it feel like to walk through surrounded by mine? There are some who have the minig, in fact, on the Seder night, to take the matzahs, put it on their shoulder, and to walk around the table. That's the same principle. It's not theoretical. It's very real. It's known the great Bali Musa, Reb Chatzke Levenstein himself, once explained, Klal Yisrael went through the Midbar. Okay, very interesting. When in Parashas Maaseh, we're told there were 42 stops and we're told the details of each place. And the Alter Mikelm used to take his Talmidim and used to open an atlas and show them each place. So it's not theoretical. It's very real. It's very tangible. This place, second place, third place, etc., etc. And this is ultimately our job. In our life of Ruchnius, to make our Ruchnius real and to make it tangible and relevant. This is the way that we have to educate our children. This is the way we have to educate our Talmidim. But above all, this is the way that we have to educate ourselves. I remember when I was engaged in yeshiva, my mashkiach, Ramot Chayosef Karnovsky Shlita, had this wonderful turn of phrase. He used to say, some people learn Gemara, and they say, it's very interesting, thoroughly invigorating. And he used to say, for those people, learning Gemara is an exercise in mental gymnastics. That's what it is. It's entertainment. Might be spiritual entertainment. It's mental gymnastics. Oh, very interesting. The shoyer gored the ox, and the ox gored the cat. It sounds like Chad Gadya all over again. No. Torah. Torah has to teach me, has to be my way of life in a very real and a very tangible way. Many of you may well have heard from me this story before, the phenomenal story with the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer was once asked the following question. There was a tragic shaila in Europe, the classic Aguna scenario, where a woman's husband had disappeared without trace. And all of the Gedolei Rabbonim in Europe had been grappling with this question, is there any way that we can ascertain as to the whereabouts of the husband? Otherwise, his wife is stuck forever. And nobody could come to a conclusive psak. So they sent the Shaila to the Godel Hador, to the Chassam Sofer. He receives a telegram. He reads the details of the question, and on the spot, he sits down and he writes a tshuva. Yes, she can remarry. And he tells his son, the Ksav Sefer, his son and successor, here, please do me a favor, take this telegram and deliver it immediately. And off the Chassam Sofer went to learn. A couple of hours later, the Chassam Sofer returns. And he sees that his son, the Ksav Sofer, has not yet sent the telegram. Father says to son, the Ksav Sofer, to the Ksav Sofer, why have you not sent my telegram? I asked you to deliver it, to dispatch it immediately. It's an urgent shaila. And even before the Ksav Sofer could answer, the Ksav Sofer said to him, one moment. Is the reason why you didn't send it because you were worried that I wrote it with such haste? Is that why you didn't send it? Says the Ksav Sofer to his Heilige Tata. He says to his father, actually, yes. This Shaila is a Shaila Chamura. Very, very difficult, deep Shaila. And I saw you receive a telegram. You read the Shaila. And in an instant, you wrote the Tshuva. And I was a little bit worried, to be honest. I thought maybe a couple of hours of consideration of the Shaila could have been in order. So the Chassam Sofer told him a Dovah Noira. One thing he told him, which is not our discussion at the moment, we've mentioned it in the past, that a Godel be Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would never allow a mistake to emerge from him. We've discussed that in the past. But then he said something else. Said the Chasam Sofer, a phenomenal thing. He said, you know, when I learn Shas, when I learn the Gemara, I don't merely learn this is the Kasha, and this is the Teretz, and this is the proof, and this is the Maskana. Next. No. When I learn the Gemara, I think to myself, what could possibly emerge from this Gemara? And I think of every last possibility, and every possible scenario and permutation, maybe A and maybe B, and maybe C and maybe D. I think of every which way that could possibly emerge from this Gemara. And therefore, when this Shaila came to my hand, it wasn't a new Shaila. I've considered this already. You're worried I didn't consider it. I wasn't ma'ayan enough. Believe you me, when I learn the Gemara, it's very real. It's not theoretical. I think, what is the possible scenario and the permutations that could emerge from this Gemara? I've considered this Shaila already. I've already learned this sugya. For the Chasam Sofer, this was the principle of Achrei Moishnei B'nei Aaron. It was very real. It wasn't just in the air, airy-fairy. I think that this is on particular relevance to the tkufa that we're living through at the moment. If I may say, there's been, as it were, an evolvement in our whole attitude and the whole reaction towards the coronavirus. The Yetzer Hara is very, very busy working overtime when this initially broke. And what was he telling us? Don't worry, it's not relevant to us. Not only is it not relevant to us, we can even explain it. It all happened, it all started in China. Ah, China, yeah, because that's the a hotbed of atheism. Yeah, they deserve it there. Ah, then it moved a little bit closer. It moved to Italy. Yeah, of course, Italy, that's the hotbed of Christianity. Oh, finally, they're getting their just desserts. Not going to get to me. Nothing to do with me. And then it moved on to Iran, closer to Eretz Yisrael. Ah, Iran, yeah, finally, they're getting what they deserve. They want to destroy Klal Yisrael. It's all them. It's nothing to do with me. Then it hits Spain. Ah, Spain, yeah, of course. A long-standing history. We still haven't forgotten the Spanish Inquisition. Oh, they deserve it as well. It then started wreaking havoc in all of Europe. Of course, there's so much anti-Semitism in Europe. It's their fault, it's their fault, it's their fault. They deserve it. And even when it hit Eretz Yisrael, I'm sure all of us heard the following line. Ah, yeah, the irreligious. They wanted to bring about public transportation on Shabbos. Oh, they're getting their just desserts now. There's no public transportation, not only on Shabbos, even on the weekday. Until our own shuls were closed. And our own yeshivas were closed. And our own koilelim were closed. And who closed them? Gedolei Yisrael closed them. Suddenly the Yetzer Hara is out packing. He's got nothing left to do. He was busy telling us it's not relevant to us. It's not real. It's something that's happening in the world. It's their fault, and it's there, and it's everywhere. And even when it came here, it's the irreligious. It's nothing to do with us. It's nothing to do with us. But when our own shuls and our own moistis ha-Torah become closed, suddenly it becomes very real. Ah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu apparently was talking to me. Not to the Chinese, and not to the Italian, not to the Spanish, and not to the Iranians, not to their religious, but to me. Yes, little me. There is a joke. You'll allow me to tell it over. In so many jokes, there is, of course, an important Musa. But I'm sure you've perhaps heard. The Rav gets up in the shul and he gives a fire and brimstone drosha, how everybody's got to improve, and if you're not careful, you never know what could happen to you. And then he yells with all his might and he says, yes, yes, It's important to take this to heart. I'm talking to you. I'm talking to you personally. Upon which Reuven, sitting in the audience, nudges his neighbor Shimon. He says, Shimon, did you hear that? The Rav says he's talking to you personally. That's the koyach of the Yetzer Hara. Kodesh Baruch Hu is talking to everybody, just not me. It's not relevant to me. It's not real. It's not tangible. Reb Chatzka Levenstein was once in a cab. And there was an irreligious, his driver, the taxi driver, was irreligious. And he struck up a conversation, and the driver says to him, he says, you know, I must tell you a wonderful, phenomenal thing once happened to me. He says, I used to be in the army many years ago. And there we were, suddenly in a place, far-flung place, me and my friend. And in the middle of the night, I hear this yelling and screaming from my friend. And I saw that a venomous snake had wrapped itself round his leg and was squeezing tighter and tighter and tighter, and he thought that was the end. And he screamed Shema Yisrael with all his might, and all of a sudden the snake just released him and slithered away, never to be seen again. And he told Reb Chatzka, he says, my friend was so moved from this that he was chayzer b'tshuva, and he says, yes, you wouldn't believe it, my friend is a shtetei merum mitzvahs. So Reb Chatzka Levenstein, the great mashkiach, said to him, yedidi, v'maitcha, what about you? And what happened to you? The driver said to the mashkiach, kvod harav, maybe you didn't understand the story. It happened to my friend. It didn't happen to me. This is the yesod. This is the koyach of the Yetzer Hara. You can see somebody saved miraculously in front of your own eyes. It's not talking to me. The Rav is telling you, I'm talking to you personally. Yeah, yeah, he's talking to my friend, the person on the right, the left, in front of me, behind me. Just not me. He's talking to China, and to Italy, and to Iran, and to Spain, and to the irreligious, but not me. Surely nothing is going to happen to me. That's what they said to the Nevi'im. The Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. Nah, can't be. Can't be. Ah, Haman says he's going to kill you today. Here's the letter. Ah, apparently it can be. This is where the Yetzer Hara was working so hard to bring us down. But now that we've seen that HaKadosh Baruch Hu clearly is talking to us, is talking to me personally, to me, to my family, to my community, then obviously it becomes very real. Then it becomes very tangible. It's not in the air. It's not theoretical. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving up his wake-up call. Perhaps we should just say in conclusion, those who are part of our Tfilavad may well have heard this before, but I think it's worth repeating. The Ran, in his drashos, wrote a drasha which many understand was a reference to the Black Plague, which was ravaging across Europe 700 years ago or so. And the Ran writes the following. Says the Gemara, that's not much. What is Yiras Hashem, an easy thing to come about? That's an easy thing to come by. So says the Gemara, who's talking over here? Moshe Rabbeinu. For Moshe Rabbeinu, it's an easy thing. Does that make any sense? Does that make any sense? It's like a millionaire coming up to the town pauper and is saying, listen, I need to ask you, all I'm asking you for you is for $1 million. I'm just asking you for $1 million. So the pauper says, what do you mean just $1 million? What do you mean, that's all you're asking? Is that a small sum of money? Yeah, for the millionaire, it's a small sum of money. The seder, but I'm not a millionaire. What on earth does the Gemara mean? All HaKadosh Baruch Hu is asking from us is just to fear him. Just Yiras Shamayim. Is that easy? Yeah, for Moshe Rabbeinu it's easy. Beseder. So what's that got to do with me? What's that got to do with me? Talk to Moshe Rabbeinu. Don't talk to me. Says the Ran. Dvarim Yesodim. It's worthwhile seeing inside. It's the 10th drosha in the Droshas Haran. Is it an easy thing to throw a rock? Heavy rock. Is it an easy thing to throw it? Or is it a hard thing to throw the rock? The answer is, it depends in which direction you're trying to throw it. Try throwing the rock upwards, very difficult proposition. Try throwing it downwards, extremely easy. What's the difference? Because one, you have gravity helping you, and once you have gravity, opposing you. So when you have gravity helping you, it's the easiest thing in the world. When you have opposing you, it's the hardest thing in the world. Says the run, is Yiras Hashem an easy thing or a difficult thing? And he says, it's exactly like throwing a rock. It depends what you have going for you or what you have going against you. He says, when the world is running smoothly, Oilam keminhogoi noyeg, everything is just fine and well. Everything is plain sailing. Says the Ran, then indeed Yiras Hashem is a difficult thing to come by. That's like throwing the rock upwards. Why? Because the world as you see it is not crying out, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where? I don't see Hashem. My parnasa is just fine. My health is just fine. Everything is working just fine. I don't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You want me to fear him? That's very, very difficult. Says the Ran, but throwing the rock downwards, when the world is turned upside down and you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Zeh Keli V'Anveihu, then Yiras Shomayim is the easiest thing to come by. It's the easiest thing to come by. So he says, phenomenal pshat, that's what the Gemara means. Is Yiras HaShomayim, is that an easy thing to come by? Says the Gemara, yes, for Moshe Rabbeinu it is. It doesn't mean because Moshe Rabbeinu was great. It means because Moshe Rabbeinu lived through miraculous times. Moshe Rabbeinu saw the Eser Makos. Moshe Rabbeinu saw Yetzias Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu saw Kriyas Yamsuf. Moshe Rabbeinu saw the Ribbono Shel Olam. So then yes, Yiras Shamayim is very easy. When you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bechush, like we said before, it's not just in the air, theoretical. It's very real, very tangible. Then Yiras Shamayim is the easiest thing in the world to come by. Says the Ran in conclusion. Look what we've seen in Europe over here. Nishtanu Sidrei Bereshis. All the normal, regular rules of the world have been turned on their head. And he says, L'roiv Yoishvei Ha'olam. Doesn't this sound like he wrote this morning? L'roiv Yoishvei Ha'olam. For most people living in the world, Cholu Bohem Chaloim Mushunim. There's this very, very bizarre disease that's ravaging the world. He says, it's impossible to be described in natural means. And everybody has to say three words. Etzba Elohim Hi. This is the finger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says, the Ran, what we've seen in the last year in Europe, he says, is more phenomenal, is more fantastic than what's been seen for over 200 years. Those are his words. And he says, amidst the difficulty, amidst the pain and the tears, but you have to realize that this is a golden opportunity to come by Yiras Shomayim. It couldn't be easier. You're like Moshe Rabbeinu at Yetzias Mitzrayim. Mo Hashem Shoyel Meimoch. What is HaKadosh Baruch Hu asking from you? Not much. Just to open your eyes. That's all. Just to open your eyes. And he says in conclusion, certainly he gives general guidelines, but he says, Kol Echod Ve'Echod Yoideya. Everybody knows full where he needs to fix up. He knows his own personal spiritual shortcomings. He knows where he has to be chayza b'tshuva. But the first stage is to open your eyes. And this, I think, really is, of course, the Avodas Hayoim. It's perhaps not a chiddush to anybody, but these things always need a chizuk. That whereas the Yetzer Hara is trying to convince us it started there, matzah, it's in the air. This is not the greenhouse effect, this is not global warming, and this is not the ozone layer. This is very, very real. This is real. And Mamela, when we read that first Rashi in the Torah, in this week's parasha, Acharei Moish Shnei Bnei Aaron, the genius of that second doctor was to make it very real for his patient. And that's why he was more successful with him than with the first patient. Just as Haman, in a way, was more successful than 48 Nevi'im and 7 Nevi'os. Why? Because it was tangible, because it was real. And that, therefore, is, of course, the Avodas Hayoim. Not like this soldier who saw his friend being saved and then told Reb Chatzkel, nothing to do with me, it happened to my friend. So, too, I think we've all finished saying, it's nothing to do with me, it's the Chinese and the Italians. It has everything to do with me. It's very real. We feel that tap on the shoulder. And as the Ram says, this is a golden opportunity, an opportunity not